You're listening to a podcast of Spurious Morality. And it's a few days till Christmas, and we've just remembered that we probably actually need to decorate the coffee bar.
So you're going to do the normal little coffee bar sounds, but there'll be like sleigh bells in the background.
Because that's how coffee machines work. They get added sleigh bells at Christmas.
But maybe some like rustling as the tinsel goes up, and the clinking of baubles as they get put up.
Or I could just leave this in, and
you know, it's the festive special.
Why use sound effects when you can use dialogue? Yes, it's the Christmas special. Yay!
Like what have we done now? This is series three. We've done three series. As far as like, if this was a sitcom, we'd end here and come back for like two Christmas specials in 20 years' time.
Yes. Yeah, we're not doing that. Annoyingly. But yes, it is the Spodcast Coffee Bar. Let's do the theme tune. I'm not coming up with a Christmassy version, so it will be the normal theme tune. Here you go.
You just add the sleigh bells. We've already talked about this.
Just add sleigh bells in the background.
Yeah, they don't even like, need to completely, be in time with the theme.
Yeah, completely out of time. Hello and welcome to a podcast of Spurious Morality. I'm Johnston, and with me in the coffee bar this week I have Connor. Hello, Connor.
Hello.
And we've not coffee barred for a bit. Oh, go on. What?
I just said greetings, happy Christmas.
And we've not coffee barred for a bit, so we thought Christmas was a good excuse to do one. So I'm actually sat here with a Bailey's hot chocolate while we record as well. So that's obviously on special in the coffee bar because it's Christmas.
I'm trying to remember. I have definitely had Bailey's in the past, but I couldn't actually tell you when the last time was.
So I thought you were going to chime in with like, I'm on tap water, Johnston. Just tap water.
Yes, I am actually. I think I had Bailey's just before they brought out the chocolate version. I seem to remember them bringing out a chocolate version of Bailey's a couple of years ago. I could be completely wrong, and this has been around for like forever, but I seem to remember them releasing this. It'd be about 5 or 6 years ago.
I don't like it when they mess with Baileys. Like, I just want Baileys. I just want plain, normal, ordinary. In fact, I'm not even on Baileys. I'm on the Aldi equivalent Ballycastle, which is exactly the same, but a fiver cheaper. There's some Christmas shopping advice. We're a lifestyle podcast now. But yeah, there's certain things you just shouldn't mess with, and Baileys is one of them. I want my Baileys to be Baileys flavoured. It's like chocolate orange. Leave it alone.
This is we are at risk of turning this into the Spodcast pub here, but the worst thing I have ever seen was a cocktail, which was basically a shot of Baileys dropped into a Guinness, and I can think of absolutely nothing worse.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. It's like somebody's gone, oh, those two things are Irish. Let's just put them together. That'll work, won't it?
Well, the name of the cocktail is so politically insensitive that I cannot say it on this, you know, on mic.
I now know what you're talking about. Yeah,
it was culturally offensive, shall we say?
Yes, let's. Well, that's a nice, warm, family-friendly Christmassy conversation at the start of the podcast. That's always good. So we do need to, just for a moment, remember that we're a podcast that talks a lot about Doctor Who, because the day before recording this and a few days before it goes out, we had the finale to The War Between the Land and Sea, which has been a overall quite good spin-off series to Doctor Who. You know, we've finally got the UNIT spin-off that should probably have happened in 1976, if we're all being honest. And I like, generally it worked. Like, you know, we've had a, it hasn't done anything exceptional. I don't think it's sort of broke any molds. It's kind of, it's been quite trad in terms of storytelling. We've seen it all before in a combination of Torchwood, Children of Earth, and the Sea Devils itself, the original Sea Devils story. So yeah, nothing there that's kind of rocked the world, but it's been fairly solid, or at least it started really, really solid. Like, I thought the first two episodes were exceptional. The third one was very good. And then the fourth one, if you'll excuse the pun, trod water a little bit. And the fifth one then rushed a finale out. And it probably needed another episode, and it probably needed to not, spoilers, kill off Colin McFarlane so early, because he was, I like the general. The general was good. So yeah, it's had its faults, but generally been quite good. But I think the finale is going to be the major talking point. So before we start to rip shreds out of it, do you just want to talk to us about the series as a whole, Connor?
Series as a whole, I think on paper feels quite good. Certainly those first two episodes, I came out of it thinking, actually, that was a smashing hour and a half of TV there. I've really enjoyed that. I have to say, one of the best looking things, one of the best looking, well produced things that has come out of Doctor Who, even though, like, I know everyone has said that the production values have taken a huge jump since Bad Wolf came in, and it's true that they have. This looks great, and I think it looks great because it's so grounded. You know, there's only one location in the whole thing, which is when they go down into the Sea Devil realm domain under the waters and go 8 miles down. That's the only real sort of not real world location that they have to fully fabricate this other world for. And the rest of it's very grounded. It looks very real. It looks superb. It does look like a thriller. So I thought that was good. Kate Stewart, I really enjoyed her. I think this version of Kate Stewart feels the most worthwhile, if that makes sense, and that's maybe not the right term, but I like this version of Kate an awful lot, the one that has sort of come out of the last little bit of Doctor Who and into this. Yeah, overall it's quite good. I just, and this will tie into the finale as well, I don't know why this story had to be told. I don't know. I think for a spin-off, it sort of has to justify itself. And in a, why are we telling this story? And yes, there is a, yes, it's long overdue to do another, like, huge scale. I don't think I've ever really done a massive scale humanity versus the Sea Devil sort of thing. It's a storyline I've mentioned on here before that I'm very keen to see done in Doctor Who. But we're doing this without the Doctor. The scale of this felt like it sort of needed the Doctor. And it's always, again, in the back of my head, I know they've said he's never coming back again. In this version of Doctor Who, there is a David Tennant Doctor sitting at home twiddling his thumbs while all of this is going on. And a story of this scale feels like it needs the Doctor, or needs to justify why the Doctor's not there. And the whole, like, you could say the same of Children of Earth, but the whole point of Children of Earth was humanity has to deal with this awful threat without the Doctor. They're on their own. He doesn't happen to appear that time. That's the whole point of Children of Earth. It doesn't seem this to me. This doesn't justify itself in the same way. The world has not really hugely changed at the end of it. The status quo sort of gets reset too at the end, and not much seems to have actually changed. So you could argue that we're going on a more personal journey with Salt and Barclay, but I don't know. I just don't feel... I just don't feel... Like, you can talk about the UNIT spinoff needing to be a thing. This is a one-off. You know, they're not going to do more of this, I think they've said. I just don't know why this particular story had to be told as a spin-off.
I do see exactly what you mean. Like, it's, as I said, it nothing in it is earth-shattering. Nothing in it changes things. And, yeah, there really isn't a justification for the Doctor not being there, particularly the David Tennant one. Part of me wonders if there was a plan here, like if there was going to be some kind of, I don't know, appearance from David Tennant or even from Shooter Gatwell before it all went wrong. Or
it's not I even that I want know. The Doctor to be there. It's just when it's part of the setup of this version of Doctor Who, in that they left that version of the Doctor alive on Earth and very closely connected to UNIT, because like Rose Noble has been in UNIT stories. After that, they've said Donna works for it. They're very friendly with Mel, who's been in pretty much all of the UNIT stories after the 10th or the 14th Doctor specials. It's always just in the back of my head that there is this version of the Doctor there, or it's of such a huge scale that the real quote-unquote Doctor should appear to help deal with this. I don't think it's the sort of event. I'm making a hash of it. I don't want the Doctor to be in this. I just don't think it makes sense for either version that we know is out there not to be involved with this. And they haven't satisfactorily explained or justified why this needs to be done without the Doctor. I don't know. It's nitpicky of me, and it's a really fanish complaint. And I've gone into it more than I intended to. But... yeah, it's a little niggle in the back of my head. Like, a story of this scale feels like the Doctor should be involved in some shape or form. And when they're not, I don't know. And it's the fact, why did it, what, like, I know Kate Stewart's in it, I know UNIT's in it, but we've never met Salt and Barclay before. Why did their story need to be told in this way?
And it the connection between those two characters, it felt quite forced as well, didn't it? Like, it and they were all over the place. Like, they were ambassadors, and then they were on the run together and decided to basically hook up while they were on the run. And then she found him and told him everything was going to be okay. Then the virus happened and they all started dying. And she sort of condemned him and did the whole, I'm not talking to you, I'm not going to see you again, really routine. And then 5 minutes later, they are seeing each other again and they're in love now, and he's grown gills for some reason. It just wasn't particularly... like, the relationship between the two wasn't brilliantly handled. Like, I just don't think Salt had enough time on screen for them to properly develop that relationship. And again, I don't think the payoff was particularly earned in the end. Maybe I'm just being a grouch about how it ended. Like, I overall, I have really enjoyed this series. Overall, it's had something to say. I think the message has got a bit lost in there and garbled, but it had something to say. It had something to do. I'm just not convinced about the way it was approached. And, you know, we've kind of followed the whole thing from Barclay's point of view, apart from the bits where we're following it from Kate's point of view. But those weren't the most important points of view in the whole thing at all. There were more interesting points of view that we've kind of not really focused on. So it's kind of got lost between, does it want to be a big epic event, world-changing series, or is it supposed to be about a bloke who sorted out the drivers that's ended up sort of in a far bigger role? I think ultimately it needed another episode. Like, I think that we kind of got episodes 5 and 6 in episode 5, and it all felt really, really rushed, and therefore a lot of the payoffs didn't feel earned. And yeah, I don't know. It felt like there was something missing. It's like you've got a jigsaw with 50 pieces and 48, 49 of them are present, but you're just missing one that finally finishes everything off.
I think so. Yeah. So this, I was going to say before I fully move on to talk about the finale, there was, it involves the finale as well. I don't feel like the Sea Devils were ever actually negotiating in good faith throughout the whole thing. You know, they turned up, presented their demands, and like the Sea Devils or Homo Aqua or whatever you want to call them, like they are angry throughout the whole thing, and they are justified in their anger. You know, the whole, it's presented much better in the early episodes because there's such a focus on the pollution that humanity has wrought on the seas and rivers and waterways. You know, the Sea Devils are absolutely righteously justified in their anger, but they turn up here, you know, they turn up in the negotiating room, present their demands, and then absolutely refuse to budge on them. And when humanity, you know, no matter what compromises or solutions humanity tries to offer, it's shot down, and it ends up then with the Sea Devils saying, okay, we're going to wipe out humanity now. And then part of the finale obviously is that the Sea Devils get wiped out instead. And that's meant to be, I don't know, I feel like it's slightly muddled when, you know, the ending has been slightly muddled for me because the Sea Devils 5 minutes earlier are threatening to wipe out humanity and flood, you know, they're melting the ice caps. They're going to flood the world and release all the carbon into the air and choke the human race and take the world for themselves. Like, sure, no problem. But then they get really annoyed, and it's meant to be a real sad moment when humanity wipes them out instead. Like, there's no, the Sea Devils aren't the good guys in this. There's no good or bad guys. And I'm getting muddled in saying this now, but does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
I'm doing this in such a really clunky way, but yeah, are we meant to feel sorry for the Sea Devils being wiped out when they were threatening to do the same to the human race 5 minutes earlier?
Yeah, it's kind of like, does one genocide justify another? But you know, we're supposed to be furious that it's the bad humans that have made the genocide happen. It's like, yes, but they'd have been genocided if they didn't. Genocided, that's a word now. So yeah, it's, I mean, you're right. It's right, we're into finale territory now. So yeah, it completely gets muddled because it tries to rush 3, 4, 5 points of view past the viewer in a very, very short space of time. It tries to very quickly just sort of throw, well, this is the threat, this is how it's happening, this is how it's going to be dealt with, this is it being dealt with, okay, it's dealt with now, that was very bad. Here's Goldfrapp singing Heroes, and here's a sort of muddled, slightly left-field conclusion to the whole thing. And, oh, by the way, the most interesting thing here is that Kate Stewart isn't dealing with PTSD very well, and that won't be touched upon at all when she finally comes back to Doctor Who under a new showrunner in 5 years' time.
Yes, that was woefully underplayed, or not focused on as much as it should have been. I think, for me, far and away, the best part of this was Kate Stewart and how she handles running UNIT through this, and how she did, like, two best scenes in the whole thing for me were her speaking to her therapist and blackmailing her therapist. That was a fantastic scene. And the one right at the very end where the guy throws away the bottle on the beach and she pulls the gun on him. That was a great scene. But you're right, that story will never be talked about again. And that's sad because it feels unfinished.
Maybe it will creep into a big finish. I don't know, perhaps. Yeah. No, I agree with you. But as we pointed out, it's not Kate's story, it's Barclay's story, or at least that's what we're being told. But that kind of doesn't really work if the most interesting stuff's happening to Kate.
I think, see, this is what I say about a spin-off having to justify itself as well, because it's the difference between Torchwood and the Sarah Jane Adventures and Class, because two of those, Torchwood and the Sarah Jane Adventures, have a part of Doctor Who at their core. You know, they have Captain Jack at its, you know, Torchwood has Captain Jack at its core. I know Gwen is ostensibly the main character, but you've still got Captain Jack in there. And the world of Torchwood has already been developed in Doctor Who, and this has sort of naturally hived off then into its own thing. And the same with the Sarah Jane Adventures. You know, Sarah Jane is at its very core. She's maybe not the main character. I think that's initially Maria. And then it becomes more of an ensemble thing later on. But it still has Sarah Jane and K-9 as its foundations. Class and this, I think, is where we've gone wrong, because there are very tenuous links to Doctor Who that are not the core of the programme. You know, so this more so, you know, War Between the Land and the Sea has a stronger connection to Doctor Who than Class did, because, you know, Class, the only thing that there is, you know, it's a very generic location. It's a school. That could be anywhere. It's not specifically Doctor Who related. This does have the Sea Devils, and it does have Kate Stewart and UNIT. I would say Kate Stewart is a stronger connection to Doctor Who than the Sea Devils are. In this, because again, the Sea Devils, you could almost swap out for their role in this story. They could be swapped out for, you know, the concept of a, you know, they're all new characters, but the concept of the Sea Devils themselves could come from anywhere. It doesn't have to specifically come from Doctor Who. That feels slightly interchangeable in that it's this other race earlier than, you know, humanity. Kate Stewart and UNIT are there. I think if Kate had had a larger role in this, and if UNIT had had a stronger role in this, and they had been more the focus, or pre-existing characters had been more the focus, then I think this would have been, I don't know, more appealing as a spin-off from Doctor Who. But we've got these two brand new characters who we've never met before are the two leads. You can do that, that's fine. I just don't think they're on screen for a lot of time. They are the focus for a lot of it. I still don't feel like they're very well developed. And I don't feel like they're familiar characters. I don't feel like I want to see them again. I don't think we have a connection to Barclay and Salt as much as we do Kate and UNIT, and they take more of a supporting role in it. I just don't think it was as natural a spin-off as some of the others have been, like Torchwood and Sarah Jane in the past.
I also found it a bit frustrating that, so one big complaint I've had about the last couple of years of Doctor Who, and I've mentioned it on this podcast an awful lot, is we've just not had enough time to establish characters. And so, you know, the finale to the most recent series was kind of going for a similar vibe to Journey's End. You know, Reality War was kind of, you know, that whole ensemble, the Doctor has a family kind of thing. And it just wasn't earned. I really, really struggled to bother about any of this sort of new unit family that's being established. And I think it's great. I think it's good that we have like an extensive roster of returning unit characters. And this would have been an opportunity to really, really build those up. And most of them are missing. Like, where's Mel? Where's Rose? Where's, you know? I just wish we'd have had more of the actual UNIT family that Doctor Who has spent 2 years at least trying, I'm not saying particularly successfully, but at least trying to build up. And I think there probably was a role in this for them. Like, realistically, everything that happened to Barclay, could it have just happened to Mel? Or could it have just happened to Rose? Or could it have just happened to any of these other characters that have sort of, yeah.
It has struck me as strange from the very first episode. UNIT has this new headquarters.
Yes.
You know, that Kate and all are sitting around. And it serves a very similar function. It has a fairly similar layout to that huge set they built for Doctor Who in UNIT Tower. Now, going back to the reality where I can't remember if UNIT Tower was, I know there was a battle in it, but I'm pretty sure like things got reset and, you know, why even this version of UNIT that they've spent 2 years building up in Doctor Who, it's only Kate and Shirley who come across. We don't even get the same building. Now, don't get me wrong, I think the set in The War Between the Land and Sea is much better than the one they built for Doctor Who. I actually like that a lot more. But I don't know why, like, does that make sense as well? Or is that nitpicky of me? I don't know, but it felt strange that they made such a huge thing about, oh, we've got this big UNIT set. I know they made a big thing about that in the behind the scenes, is that, oh, we've built this. This is one of the biggest sets Doctor Who has ever built. We're going to use it loads of time in the show, and we're doing this spin-off, and it's not there. And UNIT have a new base instead.
Well, but this is exactly my point. It's surely building a big UNIT tower and having a big UNIT cast is setting up a UNIT spin-off, like from day one. From the moment we saw that tower and the set in the Giggle, I was like, okay, they're doing a spin-off here. They've got to be doing a spin-off. That's the Torchwood Hub. They have built the Torchwood Hub, and it is going to be used in Doctor Who and a UNIT spin-off. Well, here's the UNIT spin-off, and the set is missing. The tower was missing. The half the characters that have been established are missing. Like, this is not the UNIT that we see in Doctor Who. It's two people, or three people, one of them gets killed, from the UNIT that we see in Doctor Who. And why have they done that? It's the equivalent of them using an entirely different set for the Torchwood Hub in Stolen Earth Journey's End. But the whole point was, we've got this massive set, let's save a few quid and use it across series. And it worked. It looked great. The Torchwood Hub looked absolutely fantastic in Stolen Earth and Journey's End being stormed by Daleks and all that kind of thing. So why haven't we got a similar kind of thing here? They're obviously kind of harking back to Torchwood so heavily. Like, there are bits of this, scenes of this, that have just been ripped straight from Children of Earth.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Children of Earth, in its penultimate episode, killed off a beloved character who'd been around for three series, and the emotional impact of that is there's still a shrine to that character in Cardiff today. Is anybody going to be building any shrines to any characters from this at all? Are we still going to be visiting those?
They do the same thing, and already we have forgotten it because Colonel Abraham gets shot dead.
Well, yeah, exactly.
They do that. Again, they're playing the greatest hits. They've killed Yanto in Children of Earth. They killed Colonel Abraham in this. But nobody cares. Now, don't get me wrong. I liked him a lot more in this than I liked him in Doctor Who. But he's not a character that we have spent any time with and have any emotional connection to. So that's the thing. I think the elements that they have brought over from Doctor Who, which is Kate, Abraham, and Shirley, and that's it. All of them get so much of a better you know, they all have, I like them more in this than I like them in Doctor Who. There was a moment actually, and I was really disappointed in the finale, because there's been the whole thing about Kate not being fit for duty, you know, in the wake of Abraham's death and her being exhausted by having to be on hand for all of this, and battling against the government as well as trying to solve the Sea Devil crisis. You know, the bit in the finale where Shirley arrives with the other guy and he's like, oh, you need to transfer all of this. He says, I want the screens, I want the access, I want all of this transferred to me right now. And Kate's sort of looking at him. I thought that was Shirley had gone and got someone else to take over
for me. Me too, yeah.
That's what I thought it was. And when it turns out that this was all above board and Kate's happy to do it and he's not actually there to take command over from her, I thought that would have been brilliant as a character, you know, as a character moment for Shirley to depose Kate because she knows that she's exhausted and not fit for duty. That would have been exceptional. I thought, oh my goodness, that is such a bold move. And then it didn't happen. And it was something else.
Yeah. No, I thought exactly the same thing was going on, and it didn't. And that's quite frustrating. Frustrating, that's a good word. You know, all in all, it was really, really good. But I think in a wider context of the Whoniverse and what's been established over the last few years and what Russell T. Davies has said in the past he wants to build, this kind of like Doctor Who MCU. Well, the Stark Tower set was always the same across the MCU. All of the characters popped up in the Avengers films and all this kind of thing. It's all well and good saying we want to model what we're doing on this really successful thing, but you need to actually analyse what makes that thing successful. And it feels like they haven't really made as much effort to tie this into what we've seen of UNIT in Doctor Who, or even the sort of slightly a nastier UNIT that we've seen in Torchwood and come across in Big Finish. None of that's there. It just feels like a different entity. It just happens to be Kate Stewart and
even
Shirley.
Even,
yeah.
The general from Torchwood, I've forgotten his name already. When we mentioned it earlier on. But the general from Torchwood in this, Colin McFarlane's character, even he feels like, I expected coming in from Torchwood, like this is a character who was in Torchwood Children of Earth years ago, and I assumed that there would be some connection back to that, either in like him having dealt with probably the most horrifying alien threat that humanity has ever encountered before. And obviously the setup here is very similar. It's the negotiation, like it feels very similar in setup to Children of Earth, like this sort of appearance of political diplomacy. But even he feels like he's been sort of filed down and the teeth have been taken out of him. Like, I expected more of the tone of Children of Earth by virtue of having one of its characters in it. And then it was just sort of another cozy member of the UNIT family. I don't know. I was glad to see him. I was really glad to see him back because he was a great character in Children of Earth and he was a great character in this as well. But he doesn't feel like the same character. And it feels like, why did he specifically, like, what was the reasoning behind him specifically coming back? I don't know. I felt my expectations were higher because of him being there. And
I'm also slightly annoyed at the fact that he basically got stupided to death. Like, he was, what, didn't properly vet somebody who was taking down on this mission with him. Because within 2 minutes they'd worked out who he was, why he'd done it, etc. And it was just like, he died because he didn't do a basic background check on one of the people that he was taking on this highly sensitive mission, really?
Was the gift not checked either? Because, like, was that...
Yeah.
you know, why was he just allowed to bring a random gift down?
Yeah, like if we've got little magic wands that tell you if your food's poisoned or not, surely we've got a little magic wand that can tell you if something that is very obviously a bomb is a bomb or not. Yeah. Anyway.
A lot of this sounds like nitpicking, but it's not. It's not nitpicking at all, but it's... It feels like it wants to be a modern day Children of Earth, and it does not have anywhere near the same punch or weight.
No, not at all. And it's again, Children of Earth had earned that over years, whereas this, none of it feels earned, which is also a big problem we've had in TV Doctor Who as well,
in
the main series.
I feel given that, do you know, maybe this would have solved part of it for me. I feel like rather than doing this one-off, if they were going to do a one-off, it should have been more closely tied to Doctor Who. It should have had more characters from Doctor Who. It should have been more focused on Kate Stewart if it was being a one-off. I think that would have been great on how Kate deals with something like this. She should have been the main character for this, for me. It should have been Kate's story. And the story that we got for Kate in this was fantastic. And that should have been the main focus, I think. For me, that's what I would have enjoyed. If they were going to do this spin-off with new characters, etc., I feel like it should have been set up to be a recurring show. This should have been series one. We could have gone into series two. Because that, for me, would have been the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe aspect of it, because, you know, every character in the Marvel Universe has had some sort of potential to come back. And I don't feel like Salt or Barkley need to come back. Their story's done. I feel like it should have been set up to be a continuing series, like Torchwood and Sarah Jane Adventures, where we should have been getting series one, series two or something, and so on. Something that had the potential to run on. But we're doing this one-off instead. I don't know. I have nothing to do with the TV industry. That might be rubbish, but... I don't know. It's, do you know what I will say though? I would love Doctor Who to take this format on, the miniseries format. I think it worked really well for Flux. I think the last two series of Doctor Who has shown that with the reduced episode count that it's currently running with, single episode stories does not work. It does not give the show the time to breathe that it needs in this day and age. I would like to see Doctor Who take on a miniseries format moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think just sort of TV is in a place where it is now serialized. Like the only things that are, I guess, week by week are things like Death in Paradise, you know, your cozy crimes and that kind of thing. And Doctor Who is choosing to be more serious. And I think that's right. That's the right choice. But you need to tell a story that kind of has that kind of weight behind it, and it takes time to tell that story. Like I say, my biggest complaint with this, with War Between the Land and Sea, is it probably needed one more episode. Like, that finale was a two-part finale squeezed into one. And, you know, we could have spent episode five Barkley trying to find Salt with more shadowy background stuff going on, and then it could all actually kick off in the final episode, and it would all have just felt a bit more earned. You know, you even had like a natural cliffhanger there of Barkley being drugged, injected with something, and then him eventually finding Salt. That would have been a fantastic end of episode five cliffhanger, ready for us to move into episode six with. The pacing was weird, but I think the pacing was weird because the format was weird. And I have a very, very funny feeling we've chosen the five-episode format because that's what Children of Earth was. I don't know. Should we talk about something different anyway?
Yes, I think so, because the coffee bar has become very focused.
Yes. Yes. The war between the coffee and the tea.
Oh, dear.
Right, that is the name of this episode. We have just got the name of
it. Yeah. Oh, dear.
Oh, God. All right, then. So this is meant to be a coffee bar. We are supposed to spend a bit of time talking about not Hooniversy things that we've been reading, listening to, watching, playing, etc. So I think you said you had a sort of interesting reading list lately. Talk to us about some of that.
There's two I'd love to talk about. I have recently read Misery by Stephen King. And I've only read, the only Stephen King I'd read before this was Carrie, which is very, very different to this, but I had such a good time with it. And I'm one of the very few people that has never seen the film. So I've never seen Misery. I'd never seen or read the story before. It's my first time going into it, but I watched a little clip from it. I watched a clip of Kathy Bates as Annie, there's only two characters in the book. There's a handful of very minor characters towards the end, but it's mainly a two-hander between the main character who narrates the story and Annie, who's sort of trapped him in her house. And I watched this clip of her and then could not get her performance out of my head for the rest of the book. So obviously exceptional casting for the film, which I will see good very shortly. But the book was smashing. I could not put it down. And I thought it was very gripping and very addictive reading. So I will be doing more Stephen King in the new year, I hope. But yeah, that was smashing. The other one that has been a wee bit of a surprise to me is I'm listening to the audiobook of Mr. Willman's Motoring Adventure, which is him, Andy Willman, who produced Top Gear when it came back in 2002 and went on to produce the Grand Tour. And he was sort of like, you know, obviously the key component of those shows is the trio of Clarkson, Hammett, and May. Andy Willman's sort of the fourth member behind the camera, and he's obviously a lot, like, I was not terribly aware of him previously, but it's very interesting reading. It's great actually to hear him reading. He reads the audiobook himself, and I always think that's a real plus whenever you're listening to an audiobook and it's somebody's memoirs that they read it themselves. I've really enjoyed listening to it. It's very funny. It's good to get the behind the scenes. It's sort of he deliberately goes into sort of said, here's some of the gossip that you might have heard about Top Gear behind the scenes. These parts are true. These parts are absolutely not true. Do not believe them. These people telling you do not know what they're talking about. So a lot of it goes into the behind the scenes of a lot of the stuff that we, you know, thinking about Richard Hammond's crash and, well, multiple crashes, because he goes into a lot about the Rimac crash as well. But hearing his take on the Dragster crash and a lot of the later of just the most recent part I've done, I haven't finished the book yet, but the most recent part I've done has sort of dealt with a lot of the late controversies that led up to them all leaving Top Gear. So there's two full chapters nearly on Argentina, which was very interesting to listen to. And it goes into a fair bit about it actually. Well, I was going to say it actually glosses over a lot of what led to them leaving Top Gear, which was Jeremy Clarkson thumping somebody behind the scenes. It glossed over a lot of that. I have to say, it dealt with a lot of the aftermath. Andy Willman, he wasn't present for the incident happening itself, but it is very interesting to hear a behind-the-scenes take on all of that. It's very interesting. It's very funny. and I would definitely recommend it.
That does sound particularly interesting. It's a very sort of interesting piece of TV history, because even though there were a lot of controversies and we kind of knew that that version of Top Gear was almost inevitably going to end at some point soon, it was still sort of peak television. It was huge. It was incredibly well watched, and, you know, people liked it despite, you know, not necessarily liking Clarkson. People still like the show. So, yeah, that's one that I might have to get my hands on. That sounds very interesting.
You know what I was saying? Definitely do the audiobook rather than read the paper version, because it's helping. It's really interesting hearing him reading about it and talking about it. It's almost like a really long podcast with him telling these stories. So that's a real, I think that would be my ideal way of doing it. It is really interesting because he and Clarkson both worked on the original Top Gear as well. And there's a whole chapter about that, about the original version of Top Gear before they took it over. And it goes into a lot of detail about them taking it over and how they wanted to reinvent it and what the BBC wanted and what they wanted to do and how much freedom they were given, etc., etc. It's a really interesting read, and a lot of, like, it covers all the major things about, you know, how their first special came about, what was it like making the first series, and he does, like, when the wheels did start coming off, when they basically, he said, a lot of it is like, he says, they got too big for their boots. They stopped running stuff past the BBC. The BBC then got annoyed about it whenever it all went wrong. So it is really worth doing. It has turned, I didn't expect what I have got out of it going into it. And it's been a really enjoyable read.
I think this is going to be December's Audible credit. I think that might be a decision made. I'll have a go at that. That sounds interesting. I've been cracking on with Ben Aronovich, Rivers of London, those books. I've done three of them now. I've done the audio books, and they're getting better and better. Like, I've enjoyed each one more than the last so far, and it's reached a stage now where it's obviously building up recurring villains and story arcs and that kind of thing, and it's all very, very enjoyable. It's good. I've given it to my partner to read as well. She really likes sort of crime-based thrillery type stuff, and it ticks that box as much as it ticks sort of the more fantastical things as well. So yeah, very, very good and interesting set of books, and I'm going to carry on with them. I'm not going to race through them. I think that once you've sort of spent 10 hours with Peter Grant, maybe you need a little bit of a gap. So I've been kind of doing one, moving on to other things, and then a month or so later, drifting back and doing the next one. But yes, I'm really enjoying that. I'm finding that to be a good run. Still working my way through Ian Rankin's Rebus books as well. I think I'm about halfway there. I think I've done 13. There's 25 in total at the moment. And they're just sort of continuously excellent. Like, I've, in the space of not much more than 6 months, have torn through 13 books. So I'm getting an awful lot out of them. And I think the rest of my listening is kind of Big Finish focused. I feel like there's been a lot of new releases that I've gone for recently, and that's sort of carrying on and generally been rather quite good. I'm still sort of having a think about what Big Finish of the year is. Like, I was hoping to come to this episode to go, and this one's my favourite, but I've kind of got quite a lot to choose from there. But there's been some good, interesting stuff. I am particularly looking forward to John Culshaw being the 12th Doctor in a series by the people responsible for the 11th Doctor adventures with Jacob Dubman. Hopefully lightning will strike twice and they'll be able to create something just as wonderful as they did. It's about time we got some more 12th Doctor, and I'm looking forward to that in particular. Can't think of anything else sort of that's taken up a lot of my time. I'm working through Target books, but we'll do that when we do another Off Target at some point soon. But yeah, that's kind of the audiobook side of what I'm currently doing. I've got a few things to pick up as well. I still need to go back and do the third phase of Star Wars High Republic. I sort of did the first two phases, but haven't yet done the third. I said I'd wait till it finished. Well, it finished quite a few months ago now, and I still need to return.
Did you listen to the Big Finish Christmas box set?
I did, and quite liked it, generally. What about you?
I thought it knocked spots off their Halloween one. It was just a really good wee collection of stories. I was glad to hear more Smith and Sullivan because I quite like that box set, and it was nice to get a Christmas special from them. I thought it was going to go into slightly more occult K9 and Company territory, but because let's face it, it is K9 and Company, the series. Yes. They've just added Harry Sullivan to it, which would have been an excellent idea even back in the day. But it was really nice to get a wee K9 and sort of, you know, Sarah Jane and Smith and Sullivan Christmas special with Aunt Lavinia, sort of harken back to K9 and Company. It just maybe would have been nice to get slightly more of the occult flavour the original had. But even this, I thought it was a great wee story. The Missy one I really enjoyed. That was quite fun. The standout, I think, was definitely the Eighth Doctor special. There was a nice wee surprise towards the end of that I won't spoil for anyone who hasn't heard it, because it is worth doing. I did not clock it at all. I don't think you're meant to clock it, but whenever a penny drops, it's like, okay, we'll take this. That's really nice. That was a fun... I thought it was a fun wee box set. It'll be nice to revisit it down the line. I like those little grab bag box sets. Between the Halloween one was, I thought the stories weren't great. The unit one was really good. I really enjoyed the unit one, but I thought the others were a bit meh. But I still like the concept of a little grab bag. Oh, you want a bunch of different characters? Here's a really cool little themed box set with lots of different things on offer.
I hope we get more, and I hope that they get spread out across the year a bit more as well. It kind of feels like end of October and beginning of December. We got two of these rather wonderful anthology sets. I hope it's not October when we next see one, now when they come round and do Halloween again. But I guess it's kind of relatively the same sort of thing as they were doing with 8th of March. So maybe that's going to make a return, because it's had this year off. Did it have last year off as well? I can't remember now.
It's been a while. It's been a long time.
It has been quite a while. But yeah, funnily enough, the Christmas set, I think my favourite story was actually the one you've not mentioned, which was Legacy of Blood, which was kind of an afterthought to Jago and Lightfoot. It was Sixth Doctor and Ellie Higson, and it kind of managed to be a Jago and Lightfoot story without Jago and Lightfoot. And I really, really enjoyed that.
This is where I have to hand in my Big Finish fan card, because I've never really done Jago and Lightfoot. I think I've listened to the first box set, and I haven't heard anything else with them other than when they've cropped up in like...
Don't worry, listeners. I've muted him. He's gone. He can't hurt us anymore.
I never really got into Jago and Lightfoot. I love the characters and I love hearing them popping up on the things, but I've never sought out their own series. It was a great story. I'd managed to forget. I knew going in that she was in it, but I managed to forget by the time she appeared that Leela was going to appear, and it was really nice when she turned up.
You see, I entirely forgot Leela was going to be in it.
Whenever she came out of, I think she was in a coffin, and whenever she came out of it, like, oh my God, oh, this is really cool. I'd forgotten she was in this. I liked that it was a Jago and Lightfoot story, and I liked that Ellie was the focus, and, you know, obviously they used the theme and all. But I don't know, I don't have a familiarity with that world compared to the others. And it almost felt like it could have been in the Halloween box set as well. It didn't feel as Christmassy as the other ones.
There is that. I wonder if it was written for one and ended up being in the other or something like that. Never know. But yes, I hope we get more of these sets, because if we can sort of hit that level of quality and sort of do the character mashups well, then yeah, I'm totally up for it.
And it's nice, you know, like this time of the year, there's loads of Christmas specials from different series on. So I did like that it was a little grab bag of here's the 8th Doctor Time War Christmas special, here's the Missy Christmas special, here's the Jago and Lightfoot Christmas special, here's, you know, Smith and Sullivan Christmas special. It would be nice, you know, if they're going like next year, what, you know, what other ranges are going? We're going to get a River Song Christmas special. Could we have a Fugitive Doctor Christmas special? You know, it feels like we get Christmas specials from lots of different things at this time of the year on TV. It's cool that Big Finish are doing them like this, and it is that little grab bag box set. I think that's really cool. I'd like them to do that again.
I'd quite like a continuing Torchwood Christmas special. Like, we've had a Colchester and Ace one, but I think I'd quite like actually, the full continuing Torchwood cast in a Christmas special. That could be quite fun. I'd be up for that.
Yeah, this makes me sad because it has been obviously probably the highlight of Big Finish's output over the last few years, and I've only dipped in and out of it, but it seems to have been the range of the highest quality. Torchwood's no more at Big Finish. They've said this whenever Torchwood Legacy releases and the main range ends, that's it. They're not doing any more.
Which is kind of mad, because the last series of Torchwood ended on a cliffhanger. Like, I'd like us to do something about that, please.
The big question is, are we going to get Absent Friends whenever they release Torchwood Legacy? I don't know. But
I'd be surprised.
It burns me that there's a whole episode of David Tennant as Doctor Who out there that we've never heard. And obviously, you know, that's not to downplay that John Barrowman is John Barrowman, etc., etc. I've no, not that I've, I probably shouldn't comment on full stop whatsoever, but I fully understand why we didn't get Absent Friends. I personally would really like to hear it.
Yeah, I'd be there for Absent Friends if it were to emerge at some point. So, well, I think we've more or less run out of time. We actually said we were going to talk about other things. We might have to do a New Year coffee bar as well or something like that, where we reflect on all the stuff we watched and played, because we've not talked about TV apart from Wars Between Land and Sea. We've not talked about video games, which you said we were going to do. So I suspect we may have to end here, and I need to go and make another Bailey's hot chocolate, frankly. That's where we're at.
Yeah, we'll come back to do the New Year one, and there'll just be the sound of an empty bottle dripping down, and it's like, no, the Bailey's is finished.
That's a cliffhanger to end on, isn't it? It's like, we've run out of Bailey's. What are we going to do? We're going to have to face a supermarket in the days leading up to Christmas. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, no, nothing worse. Nothing worse.
Well, yeah, it's been a fun trip to the coffee bar anyway. We should definitely do a New Year one to match this, I guess. But for now, we will leave it there, and I will say thank you very much for joining me. Goodbye and Merry Christmas, Connor.
Goodbye and Merry Christmas. A very Merry Christmas to all of you at home.
You had to do it, didn't you?
Yep.
Yep.